Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast. We are braving the elements to record to you tonight, providing you with all the news in competitive 40K. I am your host, Eric, and with me is my co-host, Ray.
Hello, everyone.
And we are here. Yes, we're doing... Something's happened here in our local area that hasn't happened in almost 6 months. It rained. And when it rains in Arizona, people lose their mind. But we actually had what's called a dust storm or a haboob. Comes with thunder and lightning. Actually lost power at work. So luckily things have died out just in time for this lovely recording of the podcast. So we are here in Braving the Elements for you this evening. Ray, did you lose power at all in your house?
Not even a little bit.
Awesome. Yeah, as I said, I lost it at work. And somehow, still couldn't go home early. So that kind of stunk. But,
yeah, it never works out right.
It didn't. And then on the way home, I was like, all right, hey, I'm free, freedom. And then the traffic lights to get onto the highway were still out.
Yep.
And not a single cop there to direct traffic. So I took my life in my own hands by getting on the highway. So that was fun. But anyway, let's talk a little bit about the 40K news, which there is a little bit, kind of on a small scale. But it's kind of an interesting take because we've heard this. Yeah, stop me if you've heard this one before, Ray. But Games Workshop is coming out with a new version of Kill Team, a skirmish level game for 40K.
You don't say.
I don't. So we've had, I forgot the Shadow something or other. There was.
Shadow Wars.
Right. We've had Kill Team in the past. We've had a bunch of these at this point. And it's funny, Games Workshop kind of takes it on the chin and says, we've done this before, but this is something new. And at first I was like, okay. My biggest issue has always been, I don't want to play 500-point 40K. And what they claim, this is a completely new set of rules, although they borrow a lot of the same mechanics, so it'll feel similar to 40K. It's not just 40K with a 400-point armies with lots of restrictions. And at first I was like, all right, I'll believe it when I see it. And of course, the day after we recorded our last episode, the floodgates opened with information. And I have to say, I'm very much intrigued.
Yeah. I haven't looked too in depth yet. None of the factions I would really want to get behind have been mentioned yet. But the starter is... looking pretty interesting.
I would agree. So let's break that down. We're going to go a little out of order here. So let me get to the lovely picture. So the starter set comes with full Kill Team core manual. And I don't get a sense of how like how many pages it is, but it's pretty hefty. It's at least codex thickness. So if not a full rule book. So I was like, okay, that's pretty cool. There's another Begin Here booklet. So for like noobs like me who just don't like reading the rule books, just want to play. You're good to go. You get a full squad of Skitarii. You get a full squad of Gene Stealer Cult Neophytes. You get a map, which I thought was very interesting. You get a 22-by-30-inch map, and it's double-sided, and it's cardboard. So if you're used to those starter sets you get from Infinity, it's the same-sized map. So it's a little smaller, but I thought that was kind of interesting that it's a different size. It's not the usual rollout, because they have those... 2-foot by 2-foot, I think they are. Game mats they came out with earlier in the year that are like pre-printed. They look nice, but it was like, who's going to use these? You know.
So what I like about this is something that can very much fit on a 4x4 table. It leaves about at least a good 6 inches on each side. That's the long side. And then about 12 inches on each side of the shorter side. So that's plenty of space for you to have the board up there and then have all your stuff sitting around it without cluttering other table spaces.
True. The other way I look at it is it's pretty close to a foam core that you would get at Hobby Lobby or Michael's. So if you wanted to make a 3D version of this board, you could probably go to town with that size. So it makes it pretty nifty for... But yeah, very compact. You can play this just about anywhere. Additionally, it does come with a varied set of Imperial Ruins. So these are the same Imperial Ruins that I was gushing about last episode. They showed more and more pictures. And I continue to gush, and we'll talk about that a little bit later today. They're pretty awesome. Wow. Pre-filled data cards for all your warriors, which I thought was interesting. That they're, it's kind of like a, I want to see what these cards look like, because I get the impression it's sort of like a jab at War Machine, where you get all the stats on one card. You get a booklet for a background of the two armies, which I thought was nice, because if that way you don't have to buy the codex to be indoctrinated to the lore of the Tol army. A deck to keep track of all the universal tactics in Guild Team, plus tactic cards for Gene Stealer Colts and Skitarii, including options you won't find anywhere else. So, long story short, is there are stratagems in this game, and they're not the same stratagems that you have in 40K. And, of course, an ample supply of dice and rulers to go with the game.
So, this very much sounds like they took the Shadow War Armageddon and then took a few things from the Shadespire game and kind of mixed things around a little bit to give us this new version of Guild Team.
It certainly does. And it's there's... As you see what else is coming down, because this is a very large release, and then so we'll get into that in greater detail. Just in case you're on the fence about this, like Ray, well, I don't see my faction up here. And so let's take a look at that. So they did list off all the factions that they'll be coming out with. And so far, every day this week, they've been giving a preview of how that faction plays in this new Kill Team. So all the Space Marines get dumped under Adeptus Astartes. With the exception of Death Watch, they have a separate faction. Grey Knights are a separate faction. He also got Astra Militarum, Adeptus Mechanicus, Heretic Astartes, Death Guard, Thousand Sons, Asuriani, Drukhari, Harlequins, Necrons, Orcs, Tau Empire, Tyranids, as well as Gene Stealer Cult. I was like, huh, that's quite a list.
It's just about all of them. It's only short by a few.
Right. They do include, there's also dice for each faction, which are basically a bunch of D6, and they added 2D10s, which sounds like that's mostly for post-game roundup type sort of things. But this where it gets interesting. Yeah. Where it gets interesting is they previewed what does a faction box look like, and they announced two factions. One is a Space Wolf one, and one is an Orc one. So if you're last in line for a Codex for 40K, you're first in line for Guild Team. Not sure if this is an indication or a preview of what to expect from these two codices. You can read for yourselves. But what you get is, in the Orc one, for example, you get 5 Burner Boys. They are cast in color, so you don't have to paint them. There will be already a lovely shade of green ready to play. You get an 8-page booklet detailing the background of this particular orc faction. Custom tokens featuring orc styling, so they got a lot of teeth and gits on them. 12 cards unique to the orcs, for including 6 new tactics. But this is where it gets wild. You get terrain with this package. In this case, the orcs get some of the stuff we've already seen in the past, the galvanic servo haulers, and then there are apparently rules for that particular terrain, and that you get that in the form of a specific card, and then also the data cards are pre-filled out for that particular kill team. And for the Space Wolves, same thing, you get all that nifty stuff, but you also get another terrain piece, you get a different terrain piece, which I thought was interesting. I can't for the life of me remember what that is. It's the tall, spindly looking thing. It's not the furnace, because that's the thicker one.
So the funny thing is, a lot of the pieces with these newer ones are modular. They are different depending on how much stuff you put on them. It's the one that basically almost looks like a miniaturized tower.
To me, it looks like something from like Luke's ranch in Tatooine.
Yeah. Got that domish look to it.
Yeah. You've seen them before. They've been all over the Necromunda, stuff like that.
Yeah.
In addition to that, okay, you're not quite sold on just the faction. They also have kill zone sectors. So if you want to play in a specific world, the first one they came out with was Sector Mechanicus. You get all the unique rules for fighting in this particular terrain. And they also get a unique battle board, or mat. It's still that 22 by 30 inch double-sided cardboard tabletop. And you also get 4 unique missions, and you get a whole bunch of terrain, which I'm looking at it. There's probably easily $60 worth of terrain in that box. Again, more of the Necromunda stuff. So they do hint at some Death World boxes coming out in the future. So I was like, huh, what else is coming out?
It's definitely packed full of stuff for kill teams. It's not just a release for a book. They're going all out.
Yes. So a couple other things. So I'm like most of you folks out there, not quite sold yet. So one of my biggest problems I always had with Necromunda, as well as Blood Bowl, which was my very first GW game, was the campaign system. Team or his gang got. And there was never any way to balance that, because then the next noob comes in. Hey, I saw you guys playing this for the last 3 weeks. How do I get in? And as the TO, I'd always have to have my new army, my middle army, and my go-for-the-throat army, just so whoever I'm playing, I'd have something to keep the league going. So I was never real thrilled about that. Apparently, for Kill Team, they address that. So they go, like Warhammer 40K, we will have 3 ways to play Kill Team. If you're looking to try balanced, fast-paced, competitive squad combat, you'll love batch play. While narrative play lets you duke it out, thrilling interlinked campaigns. Likewise, if you just want to throw down models and have fun, there are plenty of open play missions in the book too. So I'm very intrigued to see what these match play rules are, because that is one of those things where you get the right role in the campaign system and the army goes completely out of balance. The other thing that's also intriguing, and if you've ever tried this at your friend's house and you go over, there's 3 of you and you want to play 40K. Ever try to play a 3-person 40K game?
No.
It doesn't go well. Yeah, it's not a lot of fun. So they include multiplayer. You'll be able to play Kill Team with a single opponent or in a fast-paced multiplayer arenas with up to 4 players. Multiplayer is a core part of Kill Team, and you'll be able to find games just as balanced, fast and fun with 1, 2, or 3 foes. All right. I'm starting to feel it now. So they could talk about their missions. They give a couple examples of the stratagems. Okay, got it. They're talking about alternating activations, which, yeah, makes sense in a skirmish level game. So it's still I go, you go, but it's model at a time as opposed to fact, you know, side at a time.
Okay.
So it should be interesting what all this has to come out. Talks a little bit about the campaign and picking models and all that. Lots of wild stuff that seems to be coming out for this game. So I'm excited because I think it's a great entry point. Like, my son's been bothering me to play 40K. I know it's well over his head at this point. It's not age appropriate, but I could definitely see him playing this and getting into it. I also like this because Necromunda is a cool game if you play one-off games. Like I said, I'm not a big fan of the campaign system. But why play Necromunda and then have to buy a whole new army to play 40K? Now I can start off right in the 40K world. I also gushed about the terrain for last week. I'll keep it short. Ray's already heard enough of it. There are 4 terrain packs coming out, and these are designed to play for 40K or Kill Team. And they are designed by the same guys who did all the Necromunda terrain, so it's meant to be modular and they all interact. So you can take some of those crazy, and they show some combinations of these. So the first one is a basic ruins, which is pretty cool. It's about the size of the ruins you saw in the last 2 box releases, like the moon base and stuff like that. The tallest one being like maybe a story. Everything's like a half story that's been kind of crumbled. Next one is the administratum. That looks pretty interesting. It looks like it's about the typical 6x6 building, but they've got these new windows that the bottom levels are actually blocked out there. So even if you have windows on that, the bottom 2 inches are blocked out, so you have true line of sight blocking. Next one is the Basilicum. This thing is off the hook. It comes with 2 full stories, lots of huge windows, new doors. Again, even with the tiles that have the windows are blocking line of sight, but also comes with these two new statues that are just really awesome. Kind of the Space Marine knight pose, you know, holding the sword type thing. One of them's got a skull head under a hood. The other one's just looks like it got an iron halo. It's pretty awesome. And then the last one is the Sanctum. It's another church looking type thing. It's a little different. Doesn't come with the big statues. It comes with these flying buttresses. Yeah, I said buttress. And those come with these little statues at the top of those little spires at each one of them. And when they talk about the terrain, one of the things they point out, which I was like, huh, is that the ramparts were the places where you put your figures on for the second level. They purposely made them bigger. They used to be like these little 2-inch ramps. So it was real easy. That's a real problem right now with regular 40K, is that it's really easy to block, you know, put your models on there so you can't be assaulted on the second floor. That's going to go away real fast because on average, they're about 4x6. So there's still quite a bit of room to get larger units up there, or plenty of room for everyone else to get their models up there as well.
I'm actually glad to hear that.
Yeah, it'd be really cool. Matter of fact, they say you'll comfortably be able to fit a Redemptor Dreadnought, Death Dreads, or any larger units with the new upscale buildings, while doorways, floor sections, and balconies are perfect for models with larger bases. So I am super excited about these things. They look really, really cool. They have given week by each day so far this week a individual faction update, similar like they did when 8th edition 40K came out. We're not going to go over them too much, but one of the things I do like is they're what I hated about the old kill teams. They had these weird esoteric formulas to make sure you didn't bring like a Baneblade to a kill team game. And this time they're just very blunt. These are the units that are available to you. It's almost like each army is getting like a mini codex just for kill team. So they said, these are the units that are available. These are what you can use for them. So no more guessing. Like one of the things that was a problem with kill team, I think Necrons got messed over because they couldn't take a Necron Overlord. It didn't felt out of their rubric. So you were always led by a cryptic. It was kind of like, oh, okay. Didn't feel right.
That's actually a little bit how it's like the Armageddon. Is it in the Shadow War Armageddon, each faction could only have access to certain things.
So far they've shown off. Okay, so they start off with Skitarii, since they come with the base rulebook as well as Gene Stealer Cults. Then followed up by Adeptus Astartes. Of course, they have the poster boys. And then Orcs came out today. So interesting to see how those come out. So again, nothing. Unfortunately, I was real excited to see if there were any hints to the upcoming codices for Orcs. Nothing really there, but I'll just, you know, kind of give you an idea what they're talking about here. They kind of give a few examples. Orcs do get a stratagem for allows them to shoot twice, which I thought was interesting. And you get boys, commandos, burner boys, Ludas, and Gretchen. Those are your sole units in guild team. I was like, all right, I can deal with that. One thing that does scare me, though, if this comes out in the codex, there's a thing called Grot Shield. It's 2 command points, and basically Grots give you 2 points. Basically, you give Gretchen the savior protocols that Tau drones have. So if you're shooting at an orc, they go, no, the Gretchen stands in the way and takes the shot.
Actually, I can see that being very much a thing in 8th.
So those are some of the interesting things coming our way for kill team. So yeah, I could see this being a new part of the competitive scene. It's basically, I was expecting, like I said, a Shadespire 40K. It's not quite that exact a port, but there's a lot of interesting stuff going on here.
In the meantime, that's about all the rumors we've had that's 40K related.
That's true. So yeah, the Orc Codex rumors have died down. Still not a peep about Space Wolves. So, and then of course Gene Stealer Cult, not a peep as well. So if anything else breaks, we'll let you guys know. But that is all the news from James Workshop. There was one little bit of news we want to talk about, specifically when it comes to competitive gaming, and it was originally kind of just blurted out on Signals on the Frontline, but Frontline Gaming did reiterate that in a recent post, that they're looking for feedback, making changes to the current mission set for the ITC. So this would be ITC Champions Mission Pack. They've also updated the chess clock rules, so there's sort of, it's no longer just a primer. They are giving you some interesting rules involved. They also updated rules for ITC leagues and team events, and so everything's ready to go. They're currently working on a terrain guidelines pack, which I thought was interesting. It's so there's kind of eliminated some of the fly-by-night, tournament-by-tournament terrain rules. But the biggest thing is, as 8th edition 40K continues to evolve, so must our missions. We must start the conversation now about what we'd like to see in the missions as a community. What would you like and don't like? While secondary missions you play and why, and which you do not play and why. After BAO 2018, we will roll out the updates. So let me read that again. After BAO 2018, we'll roll out the updates. So that tells me new missions might be in place by as early as SoCal and definitely in time for Las Vegas.
When is the Bay Area Open?
All right, Ray, the Bay Area Open 2018 is July 28th and 29th. So I was wrong. It's not in 4 weeks. It's in 2 weeks. Two and a half, depending.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So we could be seeing new missions very quickly. Interesting. So we had Don on.
Definitely.
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago. We talked about how to play the secondaries. I think those are going to be under huge scrutiny in terms of, because we were talking about that a lot at the tournament I was at this weekend, which missions are essential, which armies kind of get hammered by certain secondaries, that sort of thing.
Did you do the questionnaire?
I haven't done it yet.
Okay. Yeah, so I did do it earlier, and it's very simple. It's not as complicated as some of the stuff we've seen in the past where, you know, they want to know what you think how certain rules will work. It's really just what's your favorite mission? What's your least favorite mission? They want to know why. And then they ask, you know, which secondaries you think work well and which ones you think need to be either replaced or adjusted. Hmm. It's not anybody who thinks that something needs to change in it. I would highly suggest that you find the link for the questionnaire and take the questionnaire. You could get it that done in as little as a minute or longer, of course, if you have a lot you would like to say.
Yeah, I'd have to think about it a little bit before I fill it out, because that's something where I don't want to be like, I don't like this mission without offering a solution, you know? And I think that's one of the biggest ones that came up was Gangbusters, you know, that secondary mission. And certain models just give it up too readily, or how does it work? Reese mentioned in his post that some people didn't read the fine print on Death by a Thousand Cuts. I'll agree with him. I was one of them. I thought you get the extra point if you kill three or more units. I didn't realize if you kill six or more units, you get 2 points that turn.
Yeah.
Not that I've ever, that I kill six units in a single turn often, but I have done it once or twice. That would have been good to know. So. But yeah, so if you're looking for some changes in your missions and you have some strong opinions, respectfully, get them to Frontline Gaming because they're asking for them as we speak. All right, with all that news behind us, it was a busy tournament weekend. We have several events we'd like to go over, which we will directly after this break.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
All right, we are back after the break. We had 4 GT and major level events this past weekend, so we got lots to go over. We will start in the West, the Salt Lake Gaming Con in lovely Utah. large event. It actually looks like they had well over 36 players at this particular event. So let's get to your top eight. Starting in eighth place, Charles Metz with Cabal of the Black Heart. This is an interesting event. They went full six rounds. Charles went 4-2 in this particular event. Tie for sixth place between Nick Wenker with Chaos Demons and John Stewart with Asuriani. Fifth place was Scott Rumpel with Ultramarines. Fourth place, Ryan Paulson with Imperial Knights. Jody Jensen with Cult Mechanicus comes in third. In second place, with the Tau Empire, Christopher Talley. And your 2018 Salt Lake Gaming Con with Sisters of Battle is none other than... Matthew Obermark, going the only player to go a perfect 6-0 during the event. By the way, Matthew has a really cool team name, the O2 Drop. I think that's hilarious. So,
almost ironic.
Yeah, no kidding. I actually want to see, did any of his other teammates drop after round two? Actually, one of them dropped after four games. That's pretty funny. Might have been a cutoff now that I'm looking at it, because both those guys, well, they drove together. Who knows? Looks like they may have had a drop, like a cut. If you didn't have so many wins, you don't get to come back tomorrow.
Yeah, they might have had a day two, or a round four cutoff.
Yep. So congratulations to all our winners, as well as Matthew, for a great event. Moving on, we had Warzone Man 2018 in Douglas something. No idea. It was less than, not sure what state, or if it's even in the United States, judging from the names. I have a feeling it was actually in the UK, but... Nonetheless, we have your top eight. Starting in eighth place, Imperial Knights once again cracking the top eight. James Jones rocking the Knights at this particular point. Also playing Imperial Knights, coming in seventh place, legend and comedian Dean Cook. I don't know if it's the same Dean Cook, but I can pretend. In sixth place, Kevin White with Ulithe. You know, that's a craft world we do not see a lot of. That's pretty impressive. Nurgle Demon, headed by Rob Mitchell, comes in fifth place. In fourth place, Thousand Suns player John Hicks. I just butchered your name, John. Sorry about
Hickton.
Hickston. Is that right? Hickton? Hickston, yes.
Hickton.
Yeah. Let's just do that all over again. In fourth place, Thousand Suns, piloted by John Hickton. We love your last name, by the way. Alex Heap with Adeptus Astartes coming in third place. Further proof to all of you, there's nothing wrong with Space Marines. In second place, Martin McNeil with Cabal of the Black Heart. And your Warzone Man 2018 champion is... Kieran Callister with High Fleet Kraken. Let's take a quick look at High Fleet Kraken with the winning list there. So we start off with a battalion of High Fleet Kraken. He has two Broodlords. What is this? A Tyranid army without Hive Tyrants. It's amazing. He gives one of the Broodlords Chameleonic mutation, as well as Catalyst. The other one he gives the Horror. He follows it up with three units of 15 Gene Stealers. Then adds a Vanguard detachment of High Fleet Kronos with a Neurothrope and a unit of... three units of Hive Guard. That's making it a Vanguard, Eric. Very good. I don't know if I said that correctly. He's actually got two Neurothropes, one with the Norn Crown, who is actually his army's warlord, and both of them have psychic powers. The one who is the warlord has Psychic Scream, the one who's not has Onslaught. Last but not least, he has a Supreme Command Detachment, High Fleet Leviathan. And this is, there they are, two Hive Tyrants, three Hive Tyrants. That's where they all come in, all from the Supreme Command Detachment. All of them having some sort of psychic power. He's got Catalyst twice, Dominion once, the Horror once, Paroxysm, and Psychic Scream mixed in among them. All of them have the same weapons loadout with two Twin Devourers with Brain Leech Worms.
Sounds like a fairly consistent list.
It's consistent. It's got a lot of redundancy. This is it's got a little bit of everything. I think the one thing he's probably atypical for most Tyranids lists, what we've seen, is he doesn't have quite as much board control. but I think he makes up for it in quality. When you think of most Tyranids' armies, they got tons of gaunts.
Yeah.
Just flooding the field and keeping you away from objectives. But you got 45 Gene Stealers on the table that can advance and charge and do some serious damage. You're going to think twice about grabbing an objective.
Oh, yeah.
And then the two units of three Hive Guard, lots of shooting. Remember, they don't require line of sight. And he's got three winged Hive Tyrants that get to where they need to go. So, no, I think it's a pretty solid list. Obviously, going a perfect 5-0, Kieran knew what he was doing. So, nicely done. So I mentioned Space Marines made the top three. Let's take a look at what that looks like. So, their first attachment, you have a Supreme Command Detachment of Adeptus Custodes. Three shield captains on bikes with Hurricane Bolters and Inceptor Lance. What a surprise. Follows that with a battalion. Interesting, he doesn't specify which chapter he took. Oh, Ultramarines. There it is. So he's got a Tech Marine with a conversion beamer, Storm Bolter, and Chain Sword. And he's got a jump back captain with... interesting. I take that back. He's got a battalion of soup. Because the jump pack captain with Thunder Hammer and Storm Shield is Raven Guard. And he's got three units of five scouts. Two of them are Ultramarines. One of them is Black Templar. And then in the, looks like the elite slot, he's got three Servitors, or Cenobite Servitors, which are Black Templars. He's got four Aggressors with Auto Boltstorm Gauntlets. Why do I have so much trouble saying that word today? And Fragstorm Grenade Launchers. They are Raven Guard. And then he's got two Relic Scorpiuses with Storm Bolters that are Ultramarines. And last but not least, he's got two Rapier Carriers with Quad Launchers and Crew, which are also Space Marines. And then for added fun, he added a Supreme, a Heavy Auxiliary Detachment with the man, Gulliman, leading the whole group. And that is his Warlord as well.
A little surprising.
You know what? Very surprising. I'll admit it. I didn't know you could do that. That you could mix and match chapter tactics in the same battalion.
I didn't think you could.
I'm going to have to read that. I think that might be, he's probably taking a penalty of some kind. Like, he may not use any of their stratagems. I don't know. I have to reread that. It caught me by surprise. Maybe he's onto something. I don't know. Anyway. We'll have to do some research and talk about that on a future episode. One more list we want to look at real quick. As we mentioned, Ulathe rarely makes the top list. We never hear from them. What does an Ulathe list look like these days? And for you trivia fans, if you're wondering what does the Ulathe craft world give you, it's pretty much a six-up, feel no pain. So he starts off with a battalion detachment of, yes, Ulathe. Look at that. He gets an Autarch with Banshee Mask. Foul Shoes Wing, and then in a Fusion Gun and a Starglaive, so interesting. And he also took the Ulathe Fate Reader, which I believe is one of the relics. I have to double check that. He also took a Wraith Seer. Wow, we got all kinds of new models here with the D Cannon. In the troop slots, he's got two units of Guardian Defenders, two units of 10, and a unit of 5 Rangers. In the fast attack slot, he's got a minimum squad of 3 Windriders, all with Shuriken cannons. Then in heavy support slot, he's got a unit of 5 Dark Reapers with the Exarch, all with Reaper launchers. In the flyer detachment, he's got a Crimson Hunter Exarch with 2 Bright Lances, as well as a Hemlock Wraith Fighter. He then rounds this out with an Outrider detachment of Harlequins. Using the Silent Shroud mask form. In the HQ slot, he's got a Shadow Seer. He's got a 5-man troop, 2 of them with fusion pistols, 2 of them with caresses, 1 with a blade, and 2 of them with kisses. I'll decode that for you later in a second. In the elite slot, he's got a Death Jester as well as a Solitaire. And then he's got, because I mentioned it was an Outrider, he's got 3 units of 3 Sky Reavers with Haywire Cannon and Zephyr Glaives. That you'll be seeing is pretty much standard issue right now. We'll talk about that why in a second. And last but not least, he rounds it out with a Starweaver transport with two Shuriken cannons to give everybody a ride around the battlefield. Okay. I'm not sure how this list works, I'll be honest with you.
I don't know enough about Elnar to be able to say either.
I know how the Harlequin part works. I'm trying to figure out how that meshes with the Eldar part, the Ulithay part. So, as we mentioned, he's got the two units of Guardian Defenders. Okay, they all have Feel No Pain. The Wraithseer, not sure where that... I mean, it's a, for those of you who don't know, it's a Wraith Lord with psychic powers, and they are pretty short range and usually only affect other ghost infantry. So Wraith Guard, Wraith Blades, and Wraith Knights and Wraith Lords. So I'm not sure how that really benefits the rest of the army. The unit of three Wind Riders, I guess, is... At first I thought it was just an objective grabber, then why did he put the Shuriken cannons on it? I'm not sure what that does. The fighters, planes, you know, the both flyers, the Crimson Hunter and the Hemlock, those do work. I mean, those things are proven to be really nasty. The thing that kind of baffles me, though, is the Wraithseer does not have access to Doom or to Jinx, which are essential for those, because that way you lower the other person's armor save by one and you get to reroll wounds against that particular target. And the Harlequins would benefit from Doom as well, because the way the spell is written, all attacks against the targeted unit are the team, you get it, you reroll your wounds, so it doesn't have to be just the craft world attacking it. As for the Harlequins, as I'm looking at this, pretty straightforward. The ride gives them lots of extra movement. I'm not a big fan of using the Star Weavers. I think their ability to advance and charge is usually enough movement to get to where they need to be. We talked about the weapons, fusion pistols. Two is usually enough, two to three in a unit of five. You don't need all of them with fusion pistols because Harlequins are still a T3 model with a 4-up save. So you want at least a couple of bladed bodies. You don't want to lose all your expensive war gear to Overwatch. The caresses, believe, are the strength 4, so they're plus 1 strength at minus 3 AP, whereas the kiss is plus 2 strength, but it gives you D3 damage, so it's got a little bit to kill the big stuff and a little stuff to kill the small stuff. The solitaire, I'm assuming he's going to upgrade this Harlequin's kiss to the Kigarok's Rose, which makes the solitaire an infantry blender as well as a character assassin. It allows you to reroll to wounds versus infantry, and it gets rid of the D3 damage to make it a flat 3 damage. So when you go up against infantry models that are also characters, they just get destroyed.
Sounds good.
And that's the... Yeah, it's I had advice, you got to try it, and I tried it. I was stunned how effective it is. Bad news is he's still a Harlequin. So after he blends through a squad of 10 or 12 models, usually he kills 7 or 8, and then they die to morale. He's now standing out in the wind and gets killed by bolter fire. It's kind of depressing. But anyway, the Skyweavers, this is standard issue in the world of much filled with knights. These taking these Harlequin bikes with all the Havewire cannons is essential. Each one of these bikes gives you D6 shots. So he's got 6, 8. So on average, he's looking at 24 shots, hitting on 3. So that's roughly 6, 4, 6. He's looking at, about 18 hits. And then, so that means on average, he's doing 9, closer to 13 to 14 mortal wounds on a vehicle. Let me say that again, mortal wounds, because the Haywire mechanic is, we don't care what your toughness is, on a 4+, we inflict a mortal wound, on a 6, we inflict a D3 mortal wounds. Plus, that's in addition to whatever you roll. So it's already so if you're playing the Tyranid guy, and you're like, oh, what a waste, I brought Haywire to an organic battle. That's okay. It's still a AP minus 1 bolter, because it's strength 4, AP minus one. So you still have all those shots. You're going against other targets. You're still going to mow down a ton of infantry models. So not surprising. You're going to see a lot of those in the future, as that's pretty much one of the big answers to all the knights that we're seeing in the current meta. So some interesting lists. I'm gonna have to reread that thing about Adeptus Astartes, how that works, and ponder Kevin White's Ulithae list and figure out how Ulithae mixes with that. Because usually I see the Farseer giving Doom, and then that way gets you reroll those Haywire hits, so you get more chances of getting those sixes and really take out knights. Maybe we haven't come up with something that he's touched on. Don't know. All right, we now go to parts we do know where is. So Indianapolis, Indiana, home of the Circle City Warhammer GT this weekend. Quick review of your top eight, and there's some familiar names in this particular group. So at eighth place with Adeptus Custodes is Michael Ralston. Tim Miles comes in seventh with Drukhari. Joshua Gilbert with Imperial Knights comes in sixth. With Death Guard, Eric Miller finishes fifth. Steven Schuler with Imperial Knights comes in fourth. Daniel Sansow, yep, we've talked about him before, playing Tau Empire, comes in third. David Rodriguez of Team Happy with Inari comes in second place. And your Circle City Warhammer GT 2018 champion is Joshua Death. So at first you're like, oh, not him again. Here's where it gets interesting. Joshua Death playing not Death Guard, not Chaos, Cult Mechanicus. So here's the guy who's second place by a long country mile, and the overall ITC standings has completely reinvented himself with a whole new faction going 5 and up.
So do you happen to have his list?
Of course not. As a matter of fact, if you look at this event, of the 22 people that entered the event, three of them uploaded their list. So David Rodriguez, Eric Miller, and Chris Duncan, who came in 28th place, we salute you. So no, I do have no idea what's in his list. So I'm very interested to see, huh, Cult Mechanicus, huh? Interesting. There were several Cult Mechanicus players at our last event that we were at this weekend as well. And I think there might be some things in there to pair up with the knights. You know, so rather than running all knights, getting the one knight and with all the fixings to repair them. Other people see there's a lot of tools in there. I saw a lot of single knight flanked by onager dune crawlers. So all kinds of nifty stuff. So I'd be curious to see how that all pans out in the future as the meta continues to evolve. One last event to cover tonight, and that is the Warzone Houston event. Lots of Warzones today. And interesting, nobody's playing the game Warzone. Interesting. Anyway, your top eight for the Warzone Houston event, starting at eighth place, also with Cult Mechanicus, Justin Kempel of the Colorado Cutthroats, one of the top teams in the Colorado area. Seventh place, we talked about him last week, Michael DeHeos with Inari. Playing Imperial Knights, Stephen Fox comes in sixth place. In fifth place, Clifton Russell with High Fleet Kronos. In fourth place, one of the top Drukhari players currently in the country, Nick Gower. In third place, Colin McDade with Adeptus Custodes. In second place, Charles Velaquez with Chaos Space Marines. Yep, they're still kicking around, guys. And in first place, one of the other top Drukhari players is also your Warzone 2018 champion, Matthew Ali. So hats off to the tournament organizers of this event, every single player, with the exception of Philip Junghans, uploaded their list. So Philip, boo. We're kidding, Philip. No, not really, we're not. All right. Your top list looks something like, a screenshot. Oh, don't do that. Don't do that. All right, you won, so we'll talk about it. So he starts off with, looks like a battalion, a ball of the black heart, two archons, both with a blaster, both with a husk blade, one with a djinn blade, the other one with a phantasm grenade launcher. By the way, really, really like the djinn blade. That's pretty cool. Plus two attack, plus one strength and D3 damage, and AP minus three. Only bad news is after each phase, you gotta don't roll a one, otherwise your guy takes a mortal wound. He follows it up with units of five warriors. Only one of them has a blast pistol. Everyone else just has a blaster. He now also has three ravagers with disintegrators, two razor ring jet fighters, also with disintegrators. Two raiders, also with disintegrators, and three venoms with splinter cannon and twin splinter rifles. And that is his whole list, a single battalion. So, oh, wait, hold on. This is why you don't do a screenshot of your list. There we go. He also includes a second battalion, stuck down there at the bottom. Eldar Craft World includes Autok Skyrunner, Farseer Skyrunner, as well as a Warlock Skyrunner. Something's missing here. There are no troop choices in this battalion. I may be reading it wrong, so don't freak out, all you guys on the internet. He got an illegal list! Literally trying to read this screen. It's horrible. And he rounds it out with a third battalion. This looks pretty legal. Cult of Strife, Lilith, as well as another Succubus with Blast Pistol. Five witches with Agonizer, Blast Pistol, Charnette, and Impaler. Interesting.
Definitely.
That's got to be a misprint. Okay. There's also a large chunk of the list. There's like this weird black spot on the screen. I'm not sure what I'm looking at.
It's probably his troop choice.
Probably. So, weird, wild stuff. Hey, it's been a while since we've seen Chaos Space Marines in the top eight. So let's take a look at Charles's list. Oh, thankfully. Look at that. He uses a beautiful size 12 Helica font, so it's easy to read. Starts with an Alpha Legion Battalion. Chaos Lord with Jump Pack, Hydra Blade Relic. He gives him the Warlord trait, I am Alpharion, and also makes a Mark of Slaanesh. He also has a Sorcerer with a Jump Pack and a Force Staff, gave him Prescience and Delightful Agonies and Mark of Slaanesh. He also has three units of cultists, two that at the minimum 10, one with the maxed out 40, all of them with Mark of Slaanesh. Three units of three obliterators with Mark of Slaanesh, two chaos decimators with butcher cannons. You're not familiar with the chaos decimator, that's the Forge World Dreadnought. It's pretty nasty. He follows that out with a chaos demons battalion with a change caster with flickering flames and gaze of fate, Pox Springer with shriveling pox. Two units of three Nurglings, one unit of 24 pink horrors, and one pair of brimstone horrors. And then, yes, includes a 30-man unit of bloodletters with the demonic icon and instrument of chaos. So needless to say, this is a list that gets in your face very, very quickly. So he's got Tide of Traitors, he's got three obliterator units that can deep strike. The Nurglings can deploy forward to create a landing zone. The pink horrors can deep strike, and then of course the bloodletters are made to download deep strike. He's probably going to upgrade that icon so he can do a 3d6 charge when they come in.
Sounds pretty good.
That does sound pretty good. Since we talked about Cult Mechanicus in the last tournament, Justin Kempel came in 8th. Let's take a look at what that list looks like. Maybe this gives us a little hint to what people are playing. And, haha, guess what? This is the list we talked about 3 months ago. That's right. Ray and I were ahead of the curve. It's kind of like what I said about my fashion choices in the 80s. I looked really... I had the perfect Seattle look. It just looked really bad in 1984. But anyway, moving on. He starts off with a battalion. His four tools is Stygies 8. Starts off with two Tech Priest Engine Seers, Psy Axe and Servo Arms, so nothing spectacular there. One, two, three units of Skitarii Rangers, the minimum five, all with the galvanic rifles, and yeah, that's all they're armed with. And this is where, haha, Ray and I called it. In the elite slot, two units of Fulgrite Electro Priests. Interesting, he didn't max them out. He just has two units of 10. Now he's taken advantage of the new units that came out. He added a unit of Sectari Hoplites. He's got a unit of 10 of them with an Arc Lance Mag Inverter Shields. And then he has a dedicated transport. And okay, Don called this one. That's right, folks. A Terex pattern termite assault drill with storm bolters. He's got two of those. Guess who's going in those? That's why he only took 10 electro priests. I knew it. Second detachment is an imperial detachment of some sort. Blood Angels. So it looks like he's got, hey, a captain with jump pack, storm shield, thunderbolt, angel's wings. And another captain with a chainsword, jump pack, and thunderhammer. And of course he brings in Mephiston. Three units of five scouts. And then rounds it out with a super heavy auxiliary detachment. Where, here we go, a House Raven Questor Mechanicus Knight Castellan. One Siege Breaker Cannon, four Shield Breaker Missiles, and that's it. Yep, that's all the goodies he put on there. By the way, one of the funniest Freudian slips of the weekend.
Uh-huh.
Instead of calling them Shield Breaker Missiles, they call them Cheese Breaker Missiles.
I approve.
Yeah, so I couldn't stop laughing. That was hilarious. So as I suspected, he's got the solo knight. He's got all these tech priests to keep that knight alive. So they're sharing their stratagems back and forth. In case you haven't figured out, the techno priests can do one of their... Because normally you make them Stygies 8 because they can scout move just like Alpha Legion can. So... But the assault drills allows them to get deep downfield as well. So I wonder if that's in further redundancy. Anyway, long story short is the assault unit comes out and eats your face. And in, he's not going to tackle your big unit on turn one. Because what happens is the electro priests kill a small dinky unit like maybe your Nurglings or your Rangers or your scouts that are put up way forward. And as soon as that unit kills a unit in close combat, their 5-up invuln save improves the 3-up. And then they move forward and rip your face off. And he probably uses the two shield captains and Mephiston to deal with the big stuff that the knight hasn't already killed. So I have to say we saw a lot of that at the tournament I was at this past weekend. Saw several Knigget lists. Codex Knigget was definitely the rage. So if you don't have an answer for knights, whether it be the Harlequin bikes we talked about earlier or something like that particular list we just talked about, you need to find one quick because you can only dodge the knight menace for so long. I'm going to share just one quick pro tip. Came up with it on the fly during my tournament this weekend. We were playing with chess clocks. First time I played actually in a tournament chess clocks. We've been practicing a lot with them. And with the new revised rules, if neither player has more than 10 minutes left on their chess clock, it is the last turn. However, if your opponent runs out of time, the only thing he can do or she can do is make armor saves. And that happens in mid-turn. Like if you're moving a unit, you finish moving that unit, but you don't get to finish the movement phase. You don't get to do the shooting phase, no assaulting, no psychic powers. That's it. So I was playing one of the guys and he ran out of time, which saved my butt because he was about to shoot and he would have wiped out one of my units. And I looked at my clock. I had 12 minutes left and we were on turn 4. And I had all these opportunities. I could have just, okay, I'll shoot him, I'll shoot that. And I went, wait a minute. Let me do this first. So turn 5, I did my movement phase and stopped. Then went to turn 6. And then that way I had exactly like 11 minutes left to do turn 6. The reason why I did that is on turn 5, when I only did like a 30-second turn, moved my units onto objectives. So now not only do I have hold objective, but I would hold more. So turn 5, I get 2 points for holding objectives. Now I do sacrifice the didn't kill a unit that turn. Now turn six, I'm still holding more, and then I can go forward with killing more because I know he can't kill anything because he can't shoot back. So what that did was, by doing that little move, rather than doing a full turn five, doing the minimum on turn five to get that extra, I got an extra 2 points out of it that I would not normally have gotten. So it was a nice little way of manipulating the clock that way. Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. That being said, one of my opponents also pulled off a nifty, crafty little trick. So he had the Incarn, and the Incarn was board center, just ripping through my units. I was like, but even he said that he didn't kill enough, and he had this concerned look on his face, and he was right. I had two of my Talos still alive. They were within 8 inches of him, so it was going to be a guaranteed charge pretty much, and then I had another unit not too far away, so I could have peppered them with some shots and take some wounds off of them. And I had loaded it up with Kingslayer, and he was his warlord, so I would have gotten buku points just for taking wounds off the Incarn. So right before his turn ends, he goes in the shooting phase, he goes, I'm going to shoot this unit over here. And I'm going like, ha ha ha, he's distracted. What is he thinking? Here's what he was thinking. He killed this dinky unit of mine all the way in the left-hand side of the board that meant nothing for the game. Oh, a unit died? Let's teleport the Incarn all the way over there. And then my army's standing there going, we have nothing to shoot. We have nothing to charge. He ran away. Easily could have been, it's a 9-wound model, so, you know, 4-point swing right there. And that would have, knowing how the final score of that game rolled out, could have been a difference between a win and a tie. So my hat goes off to you, sir. Very nicely played. But as I mentioned, yeah, at least a third of the field had at least one knight, if not, and there were at least 4 players that had all knight lists. So if you don't have an answer for Imperial Knights yet, you better find one quick. All right, after the break, we will review your ITC top 10 for this week, as well as next week's ITC events. Welcome back after the break. We now have your ITC top 10 as updated. It can be found at both the frontlinegaming.org website as well as Best Coast Pairings. Your top 10 is as follows. In 10th place, moving down 2 spots from last week, is Ryan Olson. Moving into the top 10 for the first time in quite some time is Bruce Merker. Mitch Pelham moves up a slot from 9th to 8th place. John Levin stays put at 7th place, as does TJ Lanigan stays put at 6th place. Daniel Olivas stays put at 5th place. Jeff Robinson remains in the 4th place spot. Nick Gower also hangs on to 3rd place, being one of the better Jukari players. Joshua Death, even with his recent moment, did not make up a lot of ground on Matt Root. He's still 61 points behind your leader. Yep, I gave it away. Matt Root still continues to lead the field by a tremendous 61 points over Josh Death. And 101 points over Nick Gower and 102 points over Jeff Robinson. So we still have those key clusters. But as we're talking, we had 4 events last week, and we can see those scores shake up quite a bit. Ray, what do we have next week that we can expect?
All right, we've got the... this one's a bit of a mouthful. Kawa 2018 Chapter 3. That's in Kailua, Kona, Hawaii.
Sounds awesome.
And then we've got T-Shift Championship.
That's one of the big ones.
Washington.
That's one that really brings out a lot of players for that one, so that should be interesting to watch. So we'll have plenty of coverage of those 2 events. Thank you, Ray, for bringing that up. Hopefully we'll find out how to pronounce that Hawaiian one. Although that'd be really cool to fly to Hawaii for... it's a little 40K.
Just beware the volcano.
You know, I was talking to somebody. I have a coworker who's from Hawaii, and they were saying that it's like saying, I didn't go to New York City because I heard there was a volcano in Chicago.
Yeah, it is not anywhere near as big as some people think it is, but it makes for a good joke.
It does. But, yeah. Kaua, I think. I'll have to ask her how she pronounces that. But We'll hopefully have the correct pronunciation next week. In the meantime, look for additional Facebook updates. And if you guys could, leave us a review on iTunes. It's been a while since we've solicited your feedback. Hop on over to iTunes. Leave us a review. 1 star, 2 star, 5 stars. We'd hope be a 5-star, but hey, we got thick skin. Any feedback makes us stronger. So leave some feedback for us on iTunes. We'd appreciate it. Until next week, my name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
And thank you for listening to the Exterminatus podcast.